Hi, today is June 26, 2022. This is Mobile News Podcast 400, Lucky 13. I'm Tony Gosselaar, my good friend, the good Dr. John Westfall. Welcome back, John.
Thank you very much.
And I would like to say thank you to Paul Lawler and to Ryan Ozawa for co-hosting this, the Hawaii Techies edition, number two of this podcast, of a little mini-series I'm hoping to run this summer. So thanks to Paul and Ryan. So John was on a super secret mission, and his thoughts after 2 weeks of being away.
You know, I was on a super secret mission to, I was actually at a place that was a very conflicted place in general. It was a resort on a lake in the middle of the country that had previously been themed as a timber lodge type resort and then got rethemed as a beach resort.
Oh,
so you can imagine there's a little bit of a difference there, but aside, one of the things that I did over the last couple weeks is finished up a project from that I started in April of 2020, back when we all started a lot of projects that we had time for.
Yeah.
And at that time, so, you know, I have a network attached storage unit at home, and I am Mr. Backup. I make backups of backups of backups. I do not like the idea of ever losing files. I lost files once about 15 years ago, and that was enough for me. So my problem is I use different cloud storages. I have different things in different places, redundancy, etc. And I never quite knew if I had backed up something. And so if you don't know if you have it or not, you just back it up again. You know, better be safe than sorry. Which meant that at one point in my terabytes of NAS storage, I had about a half a terabyte of duplicate files where I would use dedupe was the software that I – or it's Dupe Guru is the software I was using to find these. And so then after I identified in April of 2020 all these duplicate files – I took them out and I moved them because I still didn't want to delete them because I was paranoid, you know. So I moved them to another directory and there they have sat. So I didn't actually clean anything up after that that finding. So this last week I finally went through and deleted out, you know, I ran Dupe Guru on multiple directories. Is this one really the same as that one? And et cetera, to try to chop through 10 to 15 years of duplicate files. And I guess I still am not completely less paranoid because on my NAS, it does have a network recycle bin feature. And all of these files that I've just deleted are going to sit in that recycle bin for, I don't know, like a year or so until they finally get deleted out. So I still could find them. But it got me thinking a lot about, we talk a lot about backups in the corporate sense, but what do people do for their home backups and home redundancy? Because I think I'm on the high end of paranoid, but I'm curious about others.
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I will guess, and it is just a guess, I'll guess most people are, who are aware and have turned on, are using their, whatever their favorite cloud is, you know, whether it's Google or Microsoft or Amazon. Last summer, I think I started backing up photos to Amazon too. Just photos. But certainly, and Microsoft OneDrive, you know, which... For me, I think, is it true it has the most storage? No, my it's the same amount of storage as my Apple cloud does now. I think it's 1 terabyte or something like that. So, but is 1 terabyte enough? For me, it's enough. But for people like photographers or videographers, 1 terabyte's not even close to enough, I'm going to guess.
Yeah. So. And, you know, just even depending on what you want to keep and how long you want to keep it, you know, email takes up a ton of space if you keep it with all the attachments and everything else.
Yeah, if I can go look what I have.
and one of the things that I think about a lot is people who use cloud storage, but they use cloud storage that they don't realize is managed by other groups. So maybe they have OneDrive at work and they just kind of throw some personal files in there just in case, you know, I know I should be using this. My worry has always been, you know, as an IT person, I have in the past, I won't say when and where, but I've made mistakes where I was supposed to disable account X and I disabled account X2, you know, something that was similarly named. And, you know, thankfully, I never deleted anyone's files, you know, that I shouldn't have. But, you know, you don't realize sometimes that those clouds, it's someone else's computer. So even if it's your own personal OneDrive, what if your OneDrive account is compromised? Or what if your iCloud is, you know, hacked or whatever it might be? You put yourself in a situation where your backup might be inaccessible. And if your backup is also your only copy, that's just really sticky of a situation.
Right. And a lot of people only have one backup. I mean, those of us who grew up in the bad old days when we were doing stuff, physical backups, you know, did a 3-2-1 backup, right? It was like three copies of everything, including that includes the original, in two different places, right? And so, you know, and my other places, when my parents were alive anyway, was my parents' home, which was, you know, about 30 miles away. And so that was my geographical two places backup. Since then, you know, it's become the remote backup has become the cloud, and three different places is two clouds and local. So
yeah,
you know, and not everybody has two clouds with 1 terabyte each, or you know, whatever it is they need. So I wonder, you know, where they're putting stuff. For me, by the way, the 2 1-terabyte backups in the cloud are iCloud and Microsoft OneDrive, you know, both of which are paid for. It's not free.
Yeah, and I tell people when they're getting into backups and what they should back up, that if you would physically cry losing something, then it needs to be in multiple places.
Yep.
You know, if it's, and it can't be, multiple places cannot be iCloud photos. Because, again, if your iCloud account gets compromised, or Apple just decides that you've done something, or they think you've done something where they delete your whole account, which has happened, unfortunately, every cloud provider's done that, you're going to say, well, I had it backed up, but then I can't get to the backup, and I can't get to the local version because my password doesn't work anymore. So I worry a lot about it, and it makes me be ultra paranoid. But when I talk to people, they just don't really – they don't keep local copies of their cloud either, which is something I think you should always do. You know, if you have a OneDrive that's got a terabyte of storage in it, you should have a local copy of that. And Microsoft's made that very difficult for us now by turning on files on demand by default. So it's very hard, unless you want to tell it to download everything, to actually have it download everything.
Right. And also the other problem is that it used to be our clouds were smaller than our physical storage, local storage, and now it's the exact opposite, right? So as hard drives disappeared, I mean, when was the last time you bought a laptop with a hard drive, or even a desktop for that matter? You know, the biggest common, and I say common, I know it can get bigger, but the biggest common solid-state drive you see these days is about 256 gigs. Anything more, and you're paying through, you know, some orifice in your body to afford it.
Definitely. And this is also where a lot of people will tell you, you know, don't worry about buying an actual network attached storage, just build your own, use a Linux distribution, all that. But one of the apps that my NAS provides is a cloud synchronization. It actually will, you know, download a full copy of my OneDrive and my Google Drive and my Dropbox.
Oh, that's interesting.
And those, you know, I could set up tools like rClone, which I do occasionally use. It's an open source product that will, you know, let you use basically rsync to a cloud or from a cloud. But, you know, the easier it is to set up, the more likely you are to set it up, the more likely it is that if it breaks, someone will notice. So even if you're a tech guru at work, you can't really roll your own at home unless you're willing to devote the same amount of time at home as you are at work to backups and disaster recovery.
Yeah. And, you know, as I found, gosh, I can't remember that. I had a really cheap local storage option. It was really popular for a while. And it used to be mostly locally based. Then they said, oh, no. You have to set up a free account with us for your doodad to work. So I did. And then the next year they went bankrupt or something. And the service went away. And so I still have the physical device. But it's useless, you know, because their service is gone, because it's a cloud-based local service, so to speak. And so I switched to, like you said, I switched to sort of just a manual means. In fact, I just plugged in my Pixel 4a Android phone to a PC the other day and backed it up there. Because as you said, you know, I said, well, where are my photos on my Pixel? They're on my Pixel and they're in the cloud. do I trust any of them? No, not really. And so I back that up to a, you know, to a, well, I guess a solid state drive, and back that up to a big USB thumb drive. But yeah. And by the way, I just look, while we were talking, I just looked up my Google, where most of my mail is. I've got 10 gigabytes of mail in Gmail. And Google Photos is kind of funny because I'm grandfathered for some stuff. But yeah, it's interesting. One other thing I noticed, by the way, it says if I logged into 1.google.home, I have a grandfathered or grandparented, I guess, to be non-sexist, a grandparented Google One account where I pay $20 a year, not a month, $20 a year for 100 gigabytes of additional storage. I think I have a total of 123 gigabytes. I know it's a weird number. But any rate, there's a box. I just noticed. I never looked at it before. There's a box on the Google One home page that says clean up space, 8 gigabytes. And I'm going to click view. And it says, oh, wow. Oh, this is really interesting, actually. So free up space across Gmail, Google Photos, and Google Drive when you review and remove extra, discard, and large items. And so I've got 71.1 megabytes of deleted emails. That's not too bad. That's not much. I've got 22.2 megabytes of spam emails, so about 100 megabytes total of spam plus deleted. And then there's no files in trash. And then it lists a whole bunch of large files, all of which are photos, by the way. And it says you can review and free up to 3.9 gigabytes of that. And it's interesting. There's also a large photos thing. I need to go look at this. What is it? Why is it a large photo? And unsupported videos that Google Photos can't process or play. I wonder what those are. And they're not too old. They're .mov files from 2021 and 2020. I have got to check this out later. This is fascinating. I have never looked at my homepage before.
Well, the other fascinating thing that I'll point out, you know, one thing that we don't back up that often or think about is backing up our mobile devices, because they're backed up to the cloud usually. And if they're backed up to your device, you don't always have access to them in a way that is accessible.
Right.
So one of the tools that I bought years ago, and it comes up in the different Mac bundles fairly often, is a tool called iMazing, I-M-A-Z-I-N-G. And iMazing will let you take a local backup of your iOS device. But what's more interesting is that not only is it a local backup, it actually is a local backup that can extract things in a format you're looking for. So if you're looking for your call log as a CSV file or your text conversation with someone as a PDF so that you can look through it and save it somewhere, it'll actually produce them in those formats for you. So I am a big fan of having that ability. Now, these do produce giant backups because they are, you know, quite large.
Sure.
If you back up your whole iPhone. But it's nice to have that as an option of, you know, I want to be able to go in and grab that text conversation I had. You know, I had a friend recently unfortunately pass away, and I was looking at text conversations I've had with her over the years, and I thought it'd be nice to have a PDF that included all of our texts and everything that we, you know, said. And so yeah, that's where these sorts of tools come in handy that you can't really easily get. Even if you are backing things up to the cloud, you know, Apple doesn't exactly just let you download a PDF of all of your texts with someone.
Right. And I just looked up the iMazing, which is iMazing.com. And for personal purchase, you can get a one-time purchase of $50 for up to 3 devices, all Apple devices, by the way. So it's all Apple. So that's pretty interesting. Now, there is one that says on any computer. Oh, I guess there's an unlimited one that also works on a PC, which is $45 a year. So, you know, $50 for or $49 for one-time purchase, $50 for one-time purchase, or $45 a year for unlimited, depending on your needs. And there is an educational discount.
And like I said, they are one of the companies that will often go into the, bundles and things like that, where you can pick up that plus a bunch of other apps for $20 or $50. So if you're looking for those things, you'll be able to find this a little bit cheaper too.
You know, I have not seen any. There used to be I forget what they're called, but like you said, various bundled offers. I have not seen a bundled offer in years, and I'm not sure why. I used to get those emails all the time, and I do check my spam and junk and all of that, and I don't see them in there, so not sure why they took me off. There was like a Mac bundle that I bought several times from, some other, a Humble bundle or something like that.
Yeah, so, they're still out there. There's, I forget which website I use that does allow you to, they actually have an RSS feed, some more old technology that I still use, RSS. And so I'll, you know, but they don't pop as much as they used to. They used to pop up at least once every
couple of months
or something like that. And now it's maybe once a quarter you get a good bundle that pops. But definitely find ways to back up the things you care about.
You know, the other thing you mentioned is something I think most people don't think about, and that's deduplication. So did you use a special tool for your deduping, or...
Yeah, the software I used, and we can put a link to this in the show notes, I'll find it, is Dupe Guru, which is open source. And Dupe Guru, it's got a minimal interface. It runs on Windows, Mac, Ubuntu, Linux, whatever you want to run it on. But the thing that I like about it is it lets you specify certain directories as your reference directories, and then other directories as your, you know, look through here. So that way, when you're getting your results list, if you say, well, I want to keep the copies here, then it's a little easier than going through. Obviously, if you've got a giant list of results, you're not going to have a lot of fun going through the giant list of results.
I find it funny how they spell dupe, by the way. It's D-U-P-E, guru, one word. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm fooling you. Dupe versus DUP, which is what I would have expected. Dupla.
Well, you know, just to,
I don't know where the E comes from.
Freak people out.
I'm just trying to figure where the E comes from. That's all. It's one of those mornings. All righty. Yeah, deduplication is a real hard problem. You know, it's or at least for, you know, for professional IT shops have, you know, all kinds of dedupe tools available to them. But for the rest of us who are, you know, at home, even if you're an IT person, you don't always have, I don't have a good dedupe tool, so thanks for pointing this one out. And it's usually not a problem. I don't mind if I have two or three versions of the same Word file that's, you know, a couple of K or a couple of megs, but when you're talking about large photos and large video files, you know, if you have a multi-gigabyte video file that's duplicated all over the place, that becomes an issue after a while, so, and many of them, so. All right, now, you know, I have not played with Universal Control. That's your next topic.
Yeah, so the other day I was sitting at my desk working or thinking about working or, you know, doing some form of work. And I had my iPad mini sitting on top of my MacBook.
Yep.
My MacBook normally is sitting closed next to a cinema display that we'll talk about. And I thought, you know, there's this Universal Control thing that I've heard about that Apple kind of rolled out slowly last year. It wasn't out exactly when iOS 15 came out, so I didn't really play with it, etc. And now I know it's available, so maybe I should try it. So I opened up my Mac or my iPad mini and played around with it, and I was able to get it up and running within a couple of seconds. It really was not that hard, although it was.
Oh, and for those listening, really, John froze for a minute, but okay, go ahead, John.
So anyway, it took it a few moments to figure out where my iPad was in spatial relationship to my MacBook. And so I got it working and played with it for about 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and then realized I didn't need it at all, so I turned it off. But I do recognize the possibilities of it. The problem that I think I ran into is that my monitor is a 10-year-old Apple Cinema display.
I hear you.
Which runs over mini display port. It's not a it's not even the Thunderbolt Cinema display, which was the last generation of them. So I'm running it over a USB hub, and it just natively does not, it's not up to speed with what Apple's expecting. So the experiences that I'm getting are not optimal versus if I had an iMac or I had the newer Cinema displays or the newer Apple displays. But all of that being said, I was surprised at how well it worked. But again, like many Apple features, I have no idea when I would actually use it. You know, are there a lot of people out there that have their iPad sitting right next to their MacBook and say, gee, if only I could touch my iPad right now, but it's so far away, you know, with the whole, you know, 5 feet away from my hand at the most. And yet, and what are you doing on your iPad that you're not already able to do on your MacBook? I mean, my mail is on both devices. My files are on both devices. Maybe
I don't know.
I have an app that I like on iOS better. But it's sort of a weird world. And plus, if I have my iOS device and I want to use it as like a second display, I'm
right.
not going to use it through universal control. I'm just going to use it as an external monitor.
Right.
Which is
right.
something we've had for a couple of years built
right.
in natively. It
works well.
And before that, we had Duet. So, yeah, I played with it, and it was one of those things of, cool, Apple, I really like this. I don't know when I'd ever use it, and I don't know if I can really say that it's a great tool when I can't even find much use scenario. Works well, but have you tried it at all with any of your devices?
I have not tried it at all. I think it's only supported on my newer iPads, like the Mini 6 and maybe the 2020 iPad Pro, both of which are... Both of which are ARM-based, not M1-based. So I know it doesn't work on my 2016 and 2017 iPad Pros.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things where I will try something on the wrong iPad, like spatial audio. When you first told me about it, I grabbed the iPad Pro I normally use to watch videos, which is not my newest one, and I looked for the set. It's just not there because it's not supported on that version of the iPad Pro. Or an iPad Mini 5, but an iPad Mini 6 and iPad Pro 2020 it is. So, anyway, so I basically gave up after one attempt because I was too lazy to turn on the other iPad. Speaking of being too lazy. But your other question actually fascinates me more is, when do you upgrade a monitor?
Yeah, that's the other weird thing. You know, I've got this Apple Cinema Display that there are a few issues I've had with it running it as a mini display port into a USB-C hub, not big enough that I've decided to back it up not back it up, but replace it. The other weird thing is that this is the monitor that tried to die on me for 6 months one time, where it did die. And then I put it in storage and I took it back out 6 months later and started working. I think it's really funny that these tech channels with Apple's latest display, they're going, you know, there's no power button on this thing. How do we deal with that? I'm thinking, Apple hasn't put a power button on their monitors in decades, almost at this point.
Oh, is that true? You know, I've never bought have I ever bought an Apple monitor? No, because I've bought iMacs, which have a monitor built in. I've never bought an Apple-branded external monitor, so I would not have known that.
Yeah, the only way that you turn them on and off is they detect a signal. And if they detect a signal, they turn on. If they don't detect the signal, they don't turn on. And I think mine for 6 months had some sort of issue with signal, and it took until those capacitors completely discharged before it would actually work again. But yeah, so I don't know. What do you do? I paid $1,000 for this monitor. That was 10 years ago. $100 a year. I guess I'm getting my money's worth
You've
out of
amortized
it.
Amortized it around. Yep.
Yeah, it's still got a good display, but it might be nice to have Thunderbolt. It might be nice to have center stage on my webcam. It might be nice to have some of those other things, but I can't justify it as long as this thing keeps kicking around. And plus, I don't want this one to die because I don't want to try to figure out what to do with it after it's dead.
You mean the safely dispose of it problem?
We have, in my town, we have one day a year that's the designated cleanup day, and it's usually Earth Day or whatever the Saturday is around
Earth
Day. And this year they didn't even announce it was happening until about, I don't know, 5 minutes before it started. And, you know, it was going on for 2 hours or something like that. So, yeah.
That is a problem. To answer your question, for me personally, I have not replaced – I've bought one external display in the last 15 years. And that was the one I'm using right now to talk to you on, actually. It's a tiny, tiny – I think it's maybe 10-inch diagonal. It's really meant for security monitors, you know, if you have a bunch of security monitors on a wall. And I bought it because I needed something that had an HDMI port on it to talk to my Raspberry Pi 4, which I bought, as you might recall, a while back. And my monitors are so old, none of them have HDMI. They're all DVI and VGA. So that's how old my monitors are. I don't even have HDMI on them.
Well, and like I said, mine is Mini DisplayPort. And Mini DisplayPort is the most annoying. I'm back when I did upgrade my MacBook in 2020, and I was going from a MacBook that had Mini DisplayPort to a MacBook that was going to be USB-C only. Right. That was a big question I had was, well, how do I basically get this thing to connect up to this Mini DisplayPort? And I had to find USB-C hubs that would support it. Most USB-C hubs will output to HDMI, but they do not output to or Mini DisplayPort.
Yeah. In fact, let me go look at. I think I have a spare in my bag. I mean, I don't want to pull the one I'm using because then I would disconnect you. But let me look. What is this one? This is not an anchor. It's something else. Does it even have a display out? It has a DVI out. I'm sorry. It has HDMI out. Full size HDMI out. So yeah, you're right. There's no Mini DisplayPort. It does have an SD card slot, which is kind of nice. Which also we don't have anymore. So this whole, you know, every time I go to Costco or Sam's Club, which is, you know, centers of technology for me, I always look at the nice monitors of various sizes, some small, some large, some curved, you know, some regular ones. And I always think, and they're not expensive. They're like maybe $150, but I just can't bring myself to buy it because I hardly ever use external monitor. I mean, I can't remember the last time I turned on my desktop PC. In fact, I should just update Windows, you know. Mm-hmm. But I've learned to live mostly with this little tiny external monitor plugged into whatever I plop down next to it. It's on an anchor, you know, USB-C hub with HDMI out and USB-C in, and everything seems to work with it. And it's tiny, but it's useful for what I need, and I just don't need a big external monitor. Well, I don't need a big it would be nice to have a big external monitor. I just don't see a need for it, especially with retirement coming up. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. Why will I need that many monitors for? And I've really learned, you know, during the pandemic especially, I've really learned to live with whatever notebook display is sitting in front of me. Mm-hmm. If it's 13 inches, I think they're all 13 inches. It's all fine. You know, I can just, mm-hmm. I just deal with it.
Well, it's interesting to think about how we upgrade or don't upgrade. I think we're so used to upgrading. We think it seems easy enough, but then once you're comfortable, I just stay with what's comfortable or do I do something different?
Yeah. And for me, it's not even comfortable. It's external displays are so they're probably the most reliable thing I own aside from maybe mice are pretty reliable. I don't have too many mice breaking on me. Microphones are pretty reliable, but then the list gets really short. You know, which is why I didn't replace my Blue Yeti mic with the Blue Yeti Nano for years until I learned that this little thing existed. And so for the last, I don't know, 8 years, I've been using a Blue Yeti mic, which replaced another, like a Snowball, I think. But boy, you know, if something costs more than $50, I need to think long and hard before I replace it if it's still working. So, and being that, you know, the cheap person I am, it's like usually answers, if it's still working, why replace it? But anyway.
I mean, you can't really argue with that, you know? It's just so weird because for so long we had the reason to upgrade was that we had great new features.
Yes.
And now we don't have great new features. We just have features.
That's right.
And they're not as jumping. You know, I often think about that time in the middle of the 2000s when each year mobile devices had something great and amazing.
Yeah.
Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, or Bluetooth and then Wi-Fi, and then GPS. And
cameras.
Better cameras. And yeah, cameras in general, and better cameras. And then it became, well, everything has that now. So
yeah,
you're not special anymore.
Yeah, and especially when there are new features that we just can't figure out. Like, what's the use case for me personally, you know, or what's the use case for anybody? I just wanted to mention one thing because maybe our fives of listeners can offer me some advice, or John, who often offers me solutions to problems I have. So I've noticed this for a couple of months now. I just can't figure it out. So this morning, just before we started the podcast, I turned on my MacBook Pro, which I use once a week on Sunday to record this podcast. And it could not connect to my 802.11g Wi-Fi network. It could connect to my 11B network, It could connect to my backup .11g network, but not the primary. Everything else is connected to it, by the way. It's just a MacBook Pro that can. And I've also noticed this problem with one of my iPad Pros, that it just some days it just doesn't want to connect, and I have to reboot the iPad. The MacBook was in a powered down state, so it didn't reboot, but it booted. So I'm not sure what the problem is. But right now I'm connected to I'm on the backup 11G access point, so all is well. But I can see the primary. I just can't connect to it. It's really, really weird. Maybe I have to reboot the access point. But just noticing that, Wi-Fi in general gets flaky every now and then, and Wi-Fi routers get old. Speaking of, reliable devices, Wi-Fi access points / access point routers are just not reliable. They die every couple of years for me. So I keep a backup. I mean, I literally have one that's in a shrink wrap box now for when this one that I replaced about 2-3 years ago dies, which apparently is going to be soon. So anyhow. Hey, have you gone to any of the mesh type Wi-Fi systems? I have not.
I have a small enough place here. I only have 1,000 square foot apartment, so yeah. I don't really feel like I need to go with a mesh network. But my router is capable of mesh. I did recently upgrade my internet speed. I now get a crazy fast internet speed because my ISP is now offering a no data cap plan. So for someone who does a lot of offsite backups, I like that.
Sure.
But now I'm pulling around 880 megabits per second down.
That's impressive.
And about 50 up.
Wow.
So I'm happy with that. But I do not have to do mesh. At least now I can just have my modem and my router. My router is this Asus crazy looking router that I've had for a few years now that thankfully now plays nice with my Sonos system. So at this moment in life, life is good. Nothing is screwed up.
Okie dokie. Well, with that, and somehow having had no topics to begin with, we have filled up 30 minutes or so. So thank you again. And we will talk to you next time.